is Mae Brussel. This is side two of tape number 380, March 16th, 1979. Next week on the tape, on tape 381, I'll give you a clear-cut outline that you can follow on this book that I'm going to share with you, Alternative 3. But this week, it'll be just random thoughts about the book and some information to share with you in general. And then I'll outline it for you, because when I take something really seriously, that's what I have to do to understand it, and it may help you to understand it also. I have a bibliography which I'm enclosing with my tapes for you. It's a piece of paper that I have had printed for several years now. I think the bibliography was made up in 3 or 4 years ago after I finished the Patty Hearst article. I guess it was in 1974. And whenever I speak at colleges or organizations and schools, I was speaking at the Carmel High School last week for the leadership class. If I teach classes, it's very confusing for people to give out hear so much information and not have something tangible that they can hold in their hands to read and look up for themselves. So this sheet of paper that I have, I always have printed when I lecture before groups and they take it home with them, because people want information on John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Chappaquiddick, Wallace, the intelligence system, and so forth. And I've selected what I consider a good list of books for a background into some of the conspiracies that are taking place. I have a list of 15 circle rings that I've talked about before. I call them the interlocking conspiracy rings, the elements that constitute a conspiracy. If any one of them falls apart, the whole conspiracy would be exposed if these links get weak and fall apart. But then I listed a section on the front page of this of the order of importance of information out to understand the assassination syndrome and the murdering of political leaders or the causes for World War III, which I believe a long time ago was imminent. And while there's some very fine books on the back side, and I have a library of literally thousands of books now, I listed in importance down here six pieces of information that I thought in that order were the clue to a lot of the crimes of the government, the major crimes going on. And the first book I listed was Clarence Lansby's book, Project Paperclip. And I've given you this list here, and you can follow it. And this was the importation of these Nazis into the United States, 642 Nazi science specialists who could bring their expertise to this country in order to arm again for World War III. They wouldn't be satisfied just to settle for a new world, for peace, for shame, or guilt. By 1943, as it's being documented now and researched in books, they had already decided to get ready for the next war, and they hid a lot of their rocket inventions and so forth away as barter for coming to this country. Now, there was something in Project Paperclip which comes out in the book, this book that I have, Alternative 3, and there was something on my mind out of this whole book that never left my consciousness. I've forgotten a great deal of the book. It's 350 pages long, but there were two paragraphs, two sections here that have stayed very firm in my mind all of these years that I picked out as being terribly important. One, I'll read you page 42 to 43, the gist of what they were saying a Project Paperclip. It told about the German scientists, their value being somewhere between $400 and $500 million, their estimated value, and they were brought into this country, and the one gentleman that was responsible for bringing them in, a Mr. Staver, was very excited because it says in Project Paperclip, by having these people here, it could ensure the supremacy of the United States in rocket development. They listened as they described their future plans. They would construct an outer station useful for astronomers and for the launching of spaceships into the stellar regions. They would construct a large reflector for focusing the sun's rays onto the Earth for power-generating purposes. The latter would be used for another objective, described as a terrible thing, a weapon which will enable the first country to achieve this undertaking to rule the entire world. The focusing of this reflector upon any living persons would kill them immediately. Ocean water would be instantly turned to steam, a forest instantly kindled. Impressed by the Germans' advanced thinking and receptive to their expressed desire to continue this work in the United States, Mr. Staver urged in a recommendation to the chief ordnance officer in Paris that 100 of these scientists be evacuated immediately within 30 days. He went so far as to suggest the Spectu Island at Aberdeen Proving Ground, useful for them to complete the development of the Wasserfall and for subsequent long-range rocket research. And with great pride and before such time as the U.S. Navy and British would do the same, they said, let us get them to the United States. We will be a major world power. This is such an exciting thing. Bring them over. Now that stayed in my mind a long, long time, almost as much as anything I've read of all of my research. And in this book, which is a story of scientists putting on a television show in England, and as a result of that show, other people came forward to them. It innocently started as a brain drain lift of people from England going to the United States, the Middle East, Europe, and Australia. And they wanted to do a study of why these people, 4 million people, have left Great Britain, one-third of them scientists and very important, well-trained people, why they're not staying in Britain. And they thought that they should investigate this. And they came across an astronomer who was at NASA in Houston, Texas, who had wind of this plan for extermination and for purposes other than what we're saying our space exploration is for, but which the Project Paperclip hints at. And this particular astronomer had a freak automobile accident. They described the London Times talking about this freak accident. His name was Mr. Ballantyne, an astronomer. And there were headlines of this car crash that they had February the 6th, 1977. Sir William Ballantyne was looking at his watch. He was waiting for a phone call and a message. And it had to do with something that happened in the NASA headquarters in Houston, Texas. And he was going to London when his car went off the road. It careered off the road on a journey to London. He was a competent and steady driver, and he was killed. Only one photograph of the crash was available to the press and the television, and a whole series were taken by agency cameraman George Green, but only one was released, and it showed part of the wreckage with a blanket-covered shape on a stretcher. He had what were orders. They got tape recordings of the plans to kill him, and it was called a hot job. He had extensive burns all over his body, and it goes into the coroner's report. But the important thing was that the hot job was ordered in Palo Alto at Stanford University, and it gives the name of the scientist. And from Palo Alto, California, they could burn and cause a car crash of this well-known, famous astronomer in London, England, who got wind of the plans of these extermination of millions and millions of people. He describes in this book, the author, Leslie Watkins, and there were a team that wrote this book, that Sir William Ballantyne's freakish death, which wasn't far from his base at Jodrell Bank, that's where the astronomers worked, was mirrored by an aerospace professor called Peterson near Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Nor did they know of the monthly conferences beneath the ice of the Arctic Ocean where they meet on submarines and plan their next moves. This book says by 1951, the V-2 rocket, a relic of World War II, had been superseded by very sophisticated missiles by 1951. We had brought the scientists over, and this particular astronomer, Mr. Ballantyne, had been to Houston, Texas, and got wind of what the NASA headquarters are about, and therefore, they've alleged here, and not lightly, and with coroner's reports, that he was murdered by officers who were ordered to do this hot job on him, which is called an expediency, a scientist professor by the name of Peterson from Palo Alto, California. I'm jumping right into this horrendous book because Project Paperclip was the first on my list of urgency of books to read to understand what is going on in the world now, what happened in the past, and how to predict the future. And I'm citing a quotation from this new book, which uses the technique that I feared would be used soon by those scientists, and how it was used to murder a man who had information about future plans that are going to affect all of our lives. There's one thing that's been worrying me about Jonestown that I might or might not have mentioned on the tapes, but if you take Time magazine, go to your library and look it up if you don't have it, the issue on Jonestown right after the death, and Newsweek, and read the books that have come out. There's three books out on Jonestown that I have already. The photographs that you've seen are limited to about 20 shots, and the bodies were lying there for 2 days when the photographers were called in. And as Time, Newsweek, LA Times, and various news media swarmed in, and they brought their cameras, I assume 35 millimeter or whatever, and the books came out, but the only pictures allowed of Jonestown are a set of about 20 pictures. Now, there were 910 people dead, but there's one shot of that vat with a woman lying close to the vat with the arm tag on her. You can see her. There are pictures of a man and woman with a child between them, again with body tags, which I believe are purposes of experimentation. There's a shot of the drugs that somebody took, and there's aerial photographs of Jonestown, and there's a couple of rooms that have been taken inside of Jim Jones' room, and a mass one of the dining room and of Jim Jones. But the three books and the major magazines and all the articles on Jonestown, considering how many men went down there and how many thousands of pictures they could take if they were shooting of all kinds of people, they only selected a few, and it's similar to this scientist dying in England. Only one shot was allowed, and all the other pictures were taken by somebody else. And in Jonestown, blankets were covered over these people. Now, there are only beds for 600 people, and 910 bodies were found, and Mark Lane came out again last week and referred to 1,100 people. So there's a discrepancy in the figures, but blankets were thrown over so we couldn't see them. But the bodies were so terribly decomposed, they said that you couldn't tell whether they were black people or white people, and they had 900 passports, but they never were linked to the people down there because they said the names had changed. And in this book, Alternative 3, it talks about 15 wild ponies dying, similar to the cattle mutilations in this country. And this was in the London Daily Mail, July 15, 1977, and said that men with face masks and metal detectors went around in Geiger counters trying to find out what happened to 15 wild ponies that were found dead, their bodies mangled and torn apart. To add to the riddle, their bodies were decomposed to virtual skeletons within 48 hours. Now, after the men left Jonestown and before the army came, these bodies were so decomposed that they were peeling fingers off and the skin had so rotted, as I say, you couldn't tell anything about these people. And I wonder if the same type of experimentations or chemicals or a neutron bomb kind of effect could have taken place down in Jonestown, similar to that is happening to these cattle mutilations, because here they were in England decomposed within 48 hours. And it doesn't seem that if the CIA told Jimmy Carter who was killed and how many were killed within moments after Leo Ryan was killed and they had a station at Matthews Ridge, it doesn't seem possible that planes couldn't have come down within 24 hours and taken everybody back before the decomposing took place. And I think that the parallels between Alternative 3 and Jonestown have to be considered in the decomposition of the body, the blankets, and the lack of original photographs that they stuck with just a select few and have not allowed any of the others or any other people or their faces to be seen. The bodies were turned face down, and we really haven't seen if they were shot, blown up, or the condition of the bodies. By the time those photographers came, we don't even know if some of them had exploded or what had happened to them face down with blankets over them. That second book on my bibliography of importance to understand yesterday, today, and tomorrow is Cookeridge's book, Galen, Spy of the Century, put out by Random House in 1971, about Hitler's chief of intelligence, the Eastern Division, who came to the United States and was given a minimum of $200 million to form the CIA and to use his agents, the same agents against the Soviet Union one time inside the Kremlin and to use him to form from our OSS the CIA. If you don't understand Reinhard Galen, you can't understand the future. And again, in that book, Galen, Spy of the Century, just as Project Paperclip in Project Paperclip, there was one page that told me the whole story of Germany, of Galen, of Alan Dulles, of the whole bloody future. And this is what scares me so much about reading that book right now, Alternative 3. On page 50 and 51, it tells the plans that Galen and the Hitler team had for winning the war in Russia. Mr. Rosenberg, who was Hitler's minister for Eastern Affairs, an important person in Adolf Hitler's career, had plans for the Soviet Union after her defeat. He would take Belarus with a population of 5.5 million, the cities of Minsk, Mogilev, and Vitebsk, I don't know if I pronounced that right, and incorporate them into East Prussia, resettled by the Germans. Now, this is the part of the book that really freaked me out, which is the purpose of writing Alternative 3, what's happening now with the intent of Galen. And given Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles and the money, $200 million, the intent of what he had, and then bringing him to this country and housing him over in Europe and treating him like a very fine general, is so horrendous. To not have kicked his ass and hung him or shot him is inexcusable. But to let that go is to relive the scene. And in Galen, Spy of the Century, this was the plan. The plan of Third Reich was to colonize under a top layer of German settlers and administered by German officials an area with a total population of over 50 million. It would extend to Moscow to include the Ukraine, the Crimea, the Black Earth region, and part of the Caucasus, including its very rich oil fields. The Russians and the Ukrainians within this German colony were to be treated in accordance with Aryan racial principles. They were to be treated as subhuman. They would receive only basic education and agricultural training with a view to turning them into a nation of slaves. All of Leningrad and the Karelian districts would be incorporated into Greater Germany. Now, Rosenberg's memorandum explained, 50 million would be subhuman agricultural training, a nation of slaves, and 40 million Soviet citizens would be needed, it would be needed to eliminate these people in the proposed colonial regions. This would be achieved by natural means, namely famine. Rosenberg's conclusion was that in this way, the steppes would never again become a danger to Germany and German-dominated Europe. It's interesting to note that in this blueprint for Germany's treatment of Russia, it corresponded in its broad outlines with the policy proposed in books of Reinhard Galen's brothers and others published by the family printing firm. They didn't advocate wholesale genocide, not wholesale, but in this case, 40 million would immediately be killed of the Soviet citizens and 50 million into subhuman agricultural training, make them a nation of slaves. Are you sick yet? Are you ready to vomit? That's so much for those two books. Those books and those pages have been very important on my mind, and I've listed those as primary to read to understand what's going on. Now, when you get to Alternative 3, the idea behind Alternative 3 of NASA, Wernher von Braun, and the Space Agency is to divide people into specifically two groups exactly as they have there, the useful people and the people that can be expendable, the people that they can do away with. They have terms for them that I'm going to share with you, and they're expendable, and they are separating people and classifying them into the desirables, into several groups, and this book goes into it, that the intent and the means are here now, and they say there's no use to complain about it. It's a fait accompli. There's nothing you can do about this anymore, so you may as well sit back and not get nervous about it. That's what, it's inevitable. Don't worry, the book says. It says that the President of the United States and the Russian leaders and the British have worked in unison to ensure what they consider to be the best possible future for mankind. The day-to-day details have been delegated to high-level professionals. It talks about Jimmy Carter or the President of the United States. Does he have personal knowledge of the terror and the clinical cruelties or the parts of the operation that are responsible for murders and mutilations? It goes on to say that that's left up to underlings, but I'm sure that he has to be advised of these things. These professionals are now classifying and has established and classified people into two groups to ensure, as I say, for what they consider is the future of mankind, the best future. They're classifying them for alternative three operation into two categories: those who are picked as individuals and those who merely form a batch consignment. That is the name for slave labor, batch consignment. And these people are to live 15 years, and then they are to be expendable. They are only allowed to live 15 years, and then new ones are brought in because there's no provisions for their old age. There's nothing we're going to need for them. Now, keep in mind, our Social Security is running out in old age. The inflation is going up the most on housing, food, medical care. And those are the things that you need, and that is where your inflation is the highest. And they have an alternative three team that they've set up to decide. The part of this team is the batch consignment, and that's the treatment meted out to the men and women, this book says, that causes the most outrage. It says some of you may be revolted by some of the atrocities involved in this process, but alternative three is separating people into two batches, and that's exactly what Reinhard Gehlen was planning in the 40s, and then was brought to the United States in 1945, and then funded. And Wernher von Braun was brought down to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and Walter Dornberger was brought to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and the satellite Nazi rocket weapons were built by the Hughes, the Boeing, particularly Lockheed and the Hughes. Various agencies have made these spaceships getting ready for the segregation process and deciding who's going to live and who's going to die. So much for Reinhard Gehlen's Spy of the Century. The intent of that book was carried out, and if these authors are right, they're proceeding right on schedule. Can you see why I'm scared and sick at this book? I think I know too much. I think I've read too many books, and I think that this isn't a science fiction. The book is filled with documentation, and let me tell you right now, what I'm sharing with you is not science fiction. This television program in England, and we'll go back into the background of the book, was a documentary, a series of 26 documentaries on scientific programs, and the only thing that instigated this entire research was to study the brain drain from England out of the country. And when they began their research, they realized that many people who left England, and they cite three in particular cases, didn't show up where they were supposed to be. They became non-persons, and we'll talk about that. The plans for death are called acts of expediency, and various people that caught on to what was happening were warned, or the politicians in Great Britain. Several of them said, it's not necessary for you and others like you to be told of the unpalatable facts. That's what they told this television team. They argue that the events of the future are now inevitable. There is nothing to be gained by prematurely unleashing fear. These plans are now inevitable. There is nothing to be gained by prematurely unleashing fear. They're working on the idea of the biblical saying of Noah being able to live out the floods because he had advanced information. He was a good person, there would be floods, and everyone else would die. And they're collecting people selectively who will survive, similar to the biblical prophecies, and deciding on their slave master teams. I don't want to wander too far off from this book, Alternative 3, but the information in here brings up so many pictures of my past work. But last week, March the 8th, a head of the Rockefeller Foundation, the scientific team, John Knowles, died. And I think of this because I read of the murder of this Mr. Ballantyne, or scientist that knew too much. He died at Boston Hospital. He was head of the Rockefeller Foundation. its president since 1972. He was 52 years old when he died, and one column said that he had cancer, and then another one quoted Henry Romney, the head director of the Rockefeller Foundation, saying this was a very unexpected sudden death, 52 years old. Jonestown happened November 19, 1978. Nelson Rockefeller was dead 2 months later, and I believe that the Venezuelan hospitals have a connection to the Jonestown experimentation, and that Nelson Rockefeller had a lot of property and interest in oil in Venezuela that has not been investigated as a possible link to experimentations in Jonestown. And then John Knowles is dead March 8, 1978, age 52, an unexpected death. And they described him as working for international relations, that he was concerned with global problems, which has another meaning when you think of the intelligence links of Nelson Rockefeller and the Rockefeller Foundation. But one of the obituaries said that he helped incorporate the International Agricultural Development Service. Now, you know, Lawrence Layton's father, Dr. Layton, a PhD, was in charge of the chemical biological warfare at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Utah. I've talked about that on other tapes. Those of you that don't have that tape can get the ones that I did on Jonestown. He's in Berkeley working for Defense Department and for agricultural departments in the Department of Agriculture. The Rockefeller Foundation is working in International Agricultural Department. Reinhard Galen's project was with the agricultural departments. And then this brilliant physician, this international person, died just last week. Robert Finch, working for Richard Nixon, wanted this particular gentleman, the head of the Rockefeller Foundation, to become head of Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. Now, that was the group that, under Mr. Richardson, Elliot Richardson, that was funding money in Boston Hospital for lobotomies that Dr. Marks and Irvin and Sweet were doing. And I've talked about the lawsuit of Leonard Kiley back there. This Health, Education, and Welfare was funding these lobotomies and brain experimentations. And this particular gentleman, this doctor, head of the Rockefeller Foundation, John Knowles, was affiliated with this Boston Hospital in Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, and with the Rockefeller Foundation at the same time, and interested in agricultural developments and international agricultural developments and institutions of international relations. And I don't think we can afford to overlook any possible links of these people to these great agricultural developments, because as this book points out, the Earth's population is growing so quickly that there's going to be too many people on the Earth, and they're polluting it too quickly, that they have to make provisions for a certain amount of numbers and sacrifice the others. And the agricultural plans are for these select slaves or drones to do enough to just keep the other people alive, so that the agricultural development of the undeveloped countries is just to select your slave labor. Only 30% of the population growth is coming from the more privileged developed countries, and 70% is coming from the underdeveloped. And these are the countries that will have to be wiped out, except for the batch consignments, which they're experimenting on now. And this book alleges that this is the cause of the Bermuda Triangle, or the pilot that disappeared recently. They didn't mention this in the book. The book, I guess, had just come out over Australia. And missing people and missing agents. And next week, there's not enough time, we're going to go into the missing people and the experimentations that are in this book. On July the 11th, 1977, the Los Angeles Times had an article that's quoted in this book by a scientist from Princeton, Dr. Gerard O'Neill, who works with NASA and MIT, and he was given $500,000 to investigate population growth. And the LA Times had an article saying that now 4 billion people on the Earth, it will grow to 6.5 billion by the year 2000. That's 20 years from now. And 30% of the world population is in developed nations. So they decide there's absolutely too many people polluting the atmosphere and too many people on the Earth. And the political ramifications are such that they he's implying that they have to make some solution to this large amount of population. They had a meeting under the Antarctic submarines of what to do with Dr. O'Neill, and decided not to kill him for saying too much, because people wouldn't take the article seriously anyway. Well, our time is out. Next week I will go into this book in detail. I think this is enough to either whet your appetite or make you sufficiently nauseated. I hate to share the information, but it's really important. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel. I'll be with you next week, and stay well if you can.